collegiately speaking.
Walks into the end zone.
Touchdown.
Punches to the end zone.
Touchdown.
This is Collegiately Speaking with the voice of Northwestern football and basketball, Dave Enning, and former Northwestern star quarterback, Dan Persa. It's Collegiately Speaking. Let's go.
And welcome to another edition of Collegiately Speaking. Dave Ennett with former Northwestern quarterback Dan Persa. All right, so last week we talked about this game with Wisconsin, and things did not go well for the Wildcats. 23-3 was the final. But let me throw this out here, Dan. A year ago, after starting the second half of the Big Ten regular season, starting the big second half of the schedule, the Wildcats were sitting at 3-4 and 1-3 in the Big Ten and proceeded to get to 7 wins, got to a bowl game, won that, finished the year with 8 victories. Same scenario this time, except that was a road game at Nebraska. They lost. This time they were playing at home against a team that really has been a rival for them, and just a rough day. I made the comment to Ted Albrecht on the broadcast. Coaches talk all the time about complementary football. That can work both ways. This was complementary football as well, but not in a positive manner.
Yeah, it was a tough day all around. I think that the defense played really well, especially losing Xander there, and hopefully he's okay long term. But you know, I think the defense played well enough to win the game. The offense just unfortunately laid an egg, kind of like the Washington game, and that the call at the end of the first half was really a backbreaker. You don't say, you know, one play loses you a game, but I think from a momentum standpoint, the way they were moving the ball or lack thereof, you know, once that fumble happened and a quick score really just deflated the team and turned into kind of an insurmountable lead.
We will visit. We're going to talk NIL this week. We're going to visit with Jacob Schmidt, your former teammate, who is head of the True NU, which is Northwestern's NIL collective. He'll talk about the big changes coming in compensating athletes in college within a year or so. So he's going to join us a little bit later on. But let's address the elephant in the room, and that is that play at the end of the half. And David Braun made the comment post-game that there's a much different mindset when you go into locker room down 7-0 as opposed to 14-0. And even though Northwestern came out, actually started the third quarter pretty well, is that become just a gulf there when you're down 14 versus 7?
I think so, just because this isn't exactly like a quick score offense that scored 50 points. I think in the past there's been offenses like that, and this really isn't one. It's more of a defensive-led team. So I think, and really more how it happened, right? You know, this has now been 2 weeks in a row. You know, the Maryland call was really a run play that turned into an RPO and Jack threw it. But I think even in that Maryland situation, right, just hand the ball off. Don't give Jack the option to pull it and throw and just go into halftime. There's the risk reward there is so upside down that it's not worth it. And then specifically on against Wisconsin, right, you get that first down and you clear yourself of really all risk. It's like, what is the upside for throwing a pass there? And I think it was some sort of double move. And again, Jack should have gotten out of there, and he should have ran forward and not fumbled. But you don't want to put that. There's no reason to put him in that situation. So I've you know, it's one time is luck, two times is a trend. Like I don't understand how that call gets made, and I'm sure Coach Braun is covering for Coach Lujan, but that's inexplicable in my mind because it effectively lost you the game.
Injuries certainly were a big part of it as well. Losing AJ Henning early. Losing Xander Mueller on defense, as you mentioned, even though the defense certainly kept him in, and you have to be impressed. We talked about him last week, Damon Walters.
He's playing great. He's playing great. I think, you know, he's a guy that Coach Braun was really high on coming out of camp. He's a talented local kid, and I think he's going to continue to get better. Obviously, the one drop pick was a little rough, but he'll make up for it over his career. But good to see him continue to progress and make a lot of plays for the defense.
Yeah, Devin Turner was also out during that game, so they really needed that. And then Mac Uline just keeps it up. He's doing it every week now.
Yeah, he's playing great. I think the fun thing to watch about Mac is just his decisiveness on a lot of plays, right? He sees something and goes and really shoots his gun and is making a lot of plays. Like the one play that he made when Wisconsin was backed up, I don't think it was a called blitz. He just saw his keys signal run right away, and he hit the gas 100 miles an hour and made it, you know, a thumping hit in the backfield. So he's a fun guy to watch. I mean, he made the same kind of play against Maryland, which I thought was 1,000% a safety, right? Same thing. I don't think it was a called run blitz. He just shot his gun, saw a key, and went. So I think, you know, when you see guys making those kind of plays, it's very exciting. So hopefully they can get Xander back soon, but Max really stepped it up as well.
Well, let's talk about Jack Lausch, because, you know, I've heard Matt Eberflus say this a lot this year with regards to Caleb Williams. It's not linear, right? You're going to have some ups and downs along the way, although lately he's been playing pretty well. But it's kind of been the same with Lausch. He had the tough day at Washington, though he didn't have a lot of help in that game. Bounced back, had a couple of real strong performances against Indiana and against Maryland on the road, but then struggled in this game. So you're a young quarterback. How does that affect you from a mental standpoint?
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing with Jack is, right, it's never going to be linear. You're going to have good games and bad games, but I think you want the band between those good games and bad games to be a little bit tighter, right? You can't go 20 for 25 with three touchdowns and then go 4 for 25 with no touchdowns at 85 yards, right? You can't have that gap in consistency. So I think it's just really him trying to, you know, miss less throws. There's a couple plays against Wisconsin where I thought he got a little too cute, you know, running, throwing on the run where he could have picked up, you know, 5 or 6 yards or a first down. It's like, especially as a young quarterback, take what the defense is giving you, run when you can as an athletic guy. So I think, I mean, he's a very confident guy, but to have a game like that really will shake you. It doesn't matter who you are, right? It doesn't matter if you're Aaron Rodgers. So I think he'll bounce back and he'll continue to get better. I just want to see him being a little bit more consistent to that baseline and not going too far low from kind of his baseline performance.
Well, he'll start in Kinnick Stadium for the first time this week, the Cats and the Iowa Hawkeyes. And this has been a very interesting rivalry over the years. Northwestern's had a lot of success against Iowa. Last year, it was the Hawkeyes at Wrigley Field winning on a late field goal. And Brendan Sullivan, who played that game for Northwestern, is now on the other side. It's like baseball, right, where a guy gets traded. Suddenly he's facing his former team, although he's playing in a reserve role behind Cade McNamara. Iowa struggled last Saturday night against Michigan State, but they come in 4-3. 2-2 in their last home game, they absolutely demolished Washington.
Yeah, you know, Iowa's a team that's kind of tough to figure out, frankly. I mean, Caleb Johnson's playing as well as any running back in the country, mm-hmm. and Cade McNamara's a very capable, consistent quarterback. And it's similar to a lot of past Iowa teams, right? Run heavy, but, you know, a quarterback that can make plays. But to your point, it's like, you know, that Washington game was not close, and I thought Washington's a pretty good team. But then, you watch the Michigan State game or the Iowa State game, and you just see kind of some ups and downs there that, you know, frankly, that's a lot of teams in the Big Ten, Northwestern included, that just really haven't found, you know, a baseline performance, and anything can happen on any Saturday, which, again, makes it a lot of fun. So hopefully Northwestern can continue their successes in Kinnick, because they certainly need it based on the upcoming schedule.
No, they went into Maryland and won, and then Maryland turns around and beats USC right. In a crazy finish. So you just don't know. Let's flip the topic here to NIL. Well, Dan, I've had a lot of people ask to explain NIL and what's going on. And I talked to Jacob Schmidt at halftime of the football game on Saturday, and we kind of skimmed the surface of a topic that I think has the attention of all fans of college athletics. Jacob is the executive director of TrueNU, Northwestern's name, image, likeness collective. But you knew him way back when he was wearing number 39 for the Wildcats.
Yeah, before he was big time, I knew him. So glad to have him on.
Jacob, how are you?
Dave, Dan, I'm great. Pleasure being on with you, even if I have to deal with personal here. I'm all in.
Well, before we get into NIL, let's get into football a little bit, because certainly you've been around Northwestern football for a long time, as have we, and have seen a lot of great matchups over the years with Wisconsin. Tough day on Saturday, but what was your takeaway?
Yeah, it's a tough day, right? I think we were coming off a high there, coming home from Maryland. You know, we felt like we maybe turned a corner, you know, played a three-phase football game, complementary football. You know, our playmakers stepped up, and we won a big game on the road. And, you know, we sort of, at least I did, from the outside looking in, felt like, hey, we've got some great momentum coming into Saturday against Wisconsin at home. Beautiful day, you know, prime for another incredible, you know, game against the Badgers. And you know, it was a great first half, right? I think we played our you-know-whats off. Our defense really played great. They're playing at a high level right now. You know, we struggled on offense, which we've done a few times this year. And, you know, I think it's frustrating when you don't move the ball the way you think you can, when you're not putting points on the board, special teams a little sloppy early. You know, it was a frustrating day. And then, you know, obviously the play at the end of the half was what felt like maybe the backbreaker. And it's weird to say that about a play in the first half, but you wanted to get into halftime, you know, down seven. And for all of a sudden that turnover to create a two-score game, it felt insurmountable, and it ended up being that way. So a frustrating day, guys, but look, we've all been around long enough to know, you know, week to week anything can happen, and this team proved a year ago they're going to keep getting better, they're going to keep developing, they're believing in what Coach Braun and Coach Lujan and Coach McGargle are doing. You know, you've got a young quarterback in Jack who has certainly shown flashes of incredible development and playmaking ability. So, you know, just get back to what we do, how we do it. Kinnick is a place that, you know, Dan, it's a second home, right? We love it there. We match up well against the Hawkeyes, you know, so I know they're excited to get back on the field this week and correct the wrongs from Saturday and get one back in the win column.
Let me ask both you guys for your favorite memory of playing at Kinnick Stadium. Dan, what stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was 08 and 09. I think we had kind of back-to-back wins, a big win for us in 08 going there, and then 09 beating them. I think they were ranked in the top five, right? So I think, and then our senior year, we you know, we were coming off a big win the year before and kind of had one get away from us. But it's always been a fun place to play and an exciting place, and the fans are on top of you and they know everything about you. But I think 08 and 09 were two pretty fun big wins for us.
Jacob, how much do you hear the fans at Kinnick?
Oh, every second. Dan said it. They're literally right behind you. They could reach, steal your helmet if you left it on the bench. And that's how close they are. So we've had some you know, not safe for work interactions with some fans over the years, even our coaches sometimes. I mean, it's a hostile environment, but that's what makes it even sweeter when you can find a way to win. And Dan outlined two of them, right? 08, 09 were, you know, were both on the field, and just they were ranked. I think Corey Wooten, you know, sacks Ricky Stanzi, fumble in the end zone, and that sort of turned that game around, and we won a close one. And then 09 was just as good. But the other one for me, which not on the field per se, but on staff, was in 2018 when we clinched the West in Kinnick.
Oh, yeah.
And we went into that game sort of unknowingly within reach, right? You needed a lot of help from some other teams across the Big Ten to clinch it that evening. And so, you know, one thing happened after another. We win a big game. Bennett Skoranek, incredible catch in the end zone that'll go down in Northwestern history. And we clinched the West in Kinnick. I mean, there's nothing sweeter than that.
Well, let me dive into NIL here, because so many people have questions about it. I probably should have opened this up to text or email questions, but just where is it now, 2 years into this? Where is NIL and the impact it's having, not just on Northwestern, but on college athletics across the board?
Yeah, Dave, it's changed college sports as we know it, right? And that might sound like hyperbole, but it's not. You know, NIL is 3 years old at this point. True NU is 2 years into this. We were a little late to the game as we all sort of watched and learned what this stuff was a few years back. But it's frankly one of the most important pieces of this college athletics puzzle right now, right? It's just essential that you have competitive rosters. And what I mean by that is, you know, the support behind what you're doing financially to retain your best players, to acquire the best players possible. It's involved in recruiting, you know, specifically on the basketball side, right? You're talking smaller rosters, you know, fewer players have a larger impact on the results. And so you've seen that sort of market just really inflate over the last couple of years, more so than football has. But it's frankly the most important thing we have going on right now. And I say all of that, and it changes every day, right? I think last time I talked to you guys, I said the same thing, but every single day something changes in this world, whether it's litigation, lawsuits, new rules by the NCAA, deregulation, the portal, agents. I mean, it's ever changing. And we're trying to forecast now 9, 10, 11 months ahead, when the reality is there's a high likelihood that all of this stuff is taken over by the schools, right? The revenue share stuff you've heard about, right? The ability for the schools to compensate these kids directly for their NIL. It's still NIL. The NCAA doesn't want to admit that it's pay for play. So the schools are going to broker these contracts with kids directly for their NIL, and there's going to be a salary cap. Every school's going to have a cap, so it's going to feel more and more like pro sports, as it has over 3 years, but even more so here starting next summer. So we're in the middle of it. Obviously, we're trying to do everything we can to support all 19 of our programs, but certainly the priority financially is football and basketball, and making sure that these two programs can continue to build and win and compete. So we're focused on that here this fall and into the winter, and then trying to figure out where do we fit into that puzzle as we get closer to next summer, relative to revenue share and what's going to happen to these collectives long term. So, yeah, guys, it's a crazy world that changes every single day.
Every institution that goes forward with this and with the salary cap and engaging in compensating their student athletes, which is what we're talking about here, everybody has to be all in on it, right? I mean, in other words, every school in the Big Ten will have the same salary cap, and then it's up to them to determine how they distribute that money.
Yeah, that's the belief, Dave. Right? Is you're going to have a cap, and ultimately, if you as an institution decide not to maximize that cap, you're putting yourself in an incredibly disadvantaged place. Right. So if you're going to compete at the Power Four, if you're one of the 18 schools in the Big Ten, you're going to maximize every penny, because you're not going to look your coaches in the eye and say, "Yeah, you know what? We're only going to do half of it. Good luck." Right. It's all in. And so we're working on that as we speak. Right. Getting to the place where Northwestern feels comfortable doing that, investing at that level in athletics here moving forward. And we're not alone. Right. Very few schools sort of have these dollars sitting around. So you've got to reallocate the budgets. You've got to, sort of rethink how you approach college athletics, and the business model has now shifted. All 60, 70 schools in the Power Four are going to go all in. There's really no choice if you want to stay at the top tier of college athletics and compete in this thing.
And then, Jacob, where does like the donors and the funds that would typically go into NIL go into it? Does that get then shifted above the salary cap as like sponsorships and different deals like that? Or does that get, you can donate to the school and the school compensates the kids? Like how does that fit in then?
Yeah. So good question, Dan. Ultimately, what the NCAA is trying to do with this settlement is eradicate sort of the phony NIL bubble that we've all created. Right. And so what they're hoping to do is ultimately squash the collective, squash this pay-for-play sort of inflated NIL that's happened over the last 3 years, allow the schools to compensate these kids directly with that cap, but then really lean into the ability to broker what they call true NIL, right? Real NIL. And those are the endorsement deals. Those are, the Caitlin Clarks and the Libby Dunns, right? People with real social media presence, real brands. Right. And if corporate America wants to invest in you and there's an ROI there, let's continue to do that. But they're trying to get rid of these donor backed rosters. And I think most of us admit, look, yeah, good. Right. Because it's not a sustainable model. The coaches hate it. Their job is now shifted to fundraising, talking to agents, dancing around the portal. Right. They can't even focus on their own damn team.
Yeah,
and so the settlement, in and of itself, should be a great thing for college athletics. There's a lot of questions around it. It's not perfect. Look, there will be litigation forever, but in general, it's going to hopefully bring some semblance of a level playing field back to this thing. You're going to be able to embrace it and maximize it on your local campus the way you see best fit. And then, the differentiator will be, how do you supplement that cap, right? You, the school can't spend more than $22 million on your athletes. So how are you finding, again, the local businesses, corporate America, powerful alums who have companies to want to sign athletes to real NIL deals that are fair market value? How do you do that on top of what the school's going to do? That's where the difference will be moving forward. The collectives are just raising money from supporters. Look, the majority of us are probably going to go away or come in-house. The nonprofit stuff, like there's going to be a whole new system in place to, a clearinghouse, a third-party arbiter who's going to determine whether these values are, or these contracts are fair market value or not. So there's a whole new system coming. And so we're all trying to figure out how do we best navigate it for our schools. The donor dollars, while they'll still be really important to Northwestern, there's going to be less and less of this direct donor to athlete feeling. It's going to be school to kid instead.
Yeah, I think that's welcome news to everybody, specifically the coaches. I think you talked about how much the coaches hated it, and you saw a lot of big profile coaches continue to retire, whether it's football and basketball, Nick Saban,
right,
and the basketball coach at Virginia. How much of that do you think affected the NCAA and this move to the new model of like losing your best coaches, and really a lot of guys just don't want to coach in college anymore because of this environment? I mean, it's everyday free agency, it's a total wild west, at least in the NBA and the NFL. There's longer term contracts, there's CBAs. Mm-hmm. How much of that was, do you think, driven by coaches that were there or coaches that retired because of it, without saying so?
Yeah, I think the NCAA listens to their member schools, right? I think all these different coaching groups and administrative professional development, like, they're giving feedback at the D1 council. They listen. And so they hear about the day-to-day headaches that these coaches have. And, yeah, you're talking about the highest of highest profile. Tony Bennett retires 2 weeks before basketball tips off here. And in large part, at least publicly, is because of sort of the evolving landscape and his inability to be the coach he wants to be in this new world, right? And so some of that has to do with, there are high-profile coaches letting their opinions be known, and the NCAA is listening. But I think a lot of it, Dan, is frankly litigation. But I think we're at a place now because of all the lawsuits over the last decade relative to, compensation and player rights and this ability to see this giant enterprise that, has allowed coaching salaries and administrative salaries to just continue to raise when the actual kids on the court or on the field are saying, well, wait a minute, where's my piece? So NIL in general, great idea. I just don't think they had a really good grasp of what was going to happen. And now 3 years into this, We're about to pay these kids like they're professional athletes. There's plenty of people that say it's a good thing. There's plenty of people that don't. But at the end of the day, it's the next iteration, and I think there's a lot of factors that went into that.
Visiting with Jacob Schmidt, Executive Director of TrueNU, former Wildcat football player, you just hit on something that I hear a lot. A lot of people say, and not just coaches. I mean, you talk about the Tony Bennett retirement and Jay Wright and Saban, but you hear from fans. You hear fans who say, this isn't what college sports is supposed to be. And I think it's a loss of innocence a little bit. Maybe the innocence was a little bit artificial. But do you get a lot of that from people saying, I don't like this idea that we're paying these guys to play while we're giving them the full tuition and the full ride?
Yeah, no, plenty of people have felt that way and have said as much directly to me over the last 2 years, especially at a place like Northwestern, where we absolutely value the diploma, right? Where these we aren't a factory. This isn't a blue blood, right? We believe in our mission here. And that is, providing this incredible experience, allowing these athletes to earning top 10, top 6 diploma now while playing their sport at the highest level. I mean, that still rings true at Northwestern. So plenty of our supporters have struggled with this idea of, wait a minute, now we're going to compensate them on top of a full scholarship? And the answer is yes, we are. Right? The answer is absolutely we are. The game has changed. I think when you sort of boil it down and you articulate it a little bit different, right, the ability for these athletes to monetize who they are, right, this I guess phony idea of amateurism over the last 50 years, right? I think plenty of people are okay with it too. Right? They understand that. Look, why shouldn't Caitlin Clark make millions when she's the face of her sport across the globe? Like, why shouldn't she be able to do that? Just because she's in college shouldn't stop the ability to do that. So plenty of people are great with it. And I think, look, what we're seeing on the field, right? Look, there's parity in college sports right now. You can't deny it, right? Look what's happening at Indiana. Look at what's happening in some of these Army and Navy, and they're not even in the NIL game. But, you know, look at what's happening with the portal. As much of a headache as it is, you see talented kids move to places where they fit better and they're able to contribute. And you see a lot of incredible matchups now from some teams that maybe you didn't expect. Look what Vanderbilt's doing, right? The ability to rebuild that thing and beat Alabama and win real SEC games. I mean, you know, it's changed this whole thing. And trust me, I'm pretty old school myself, so I struggled with it early, but it's the new world. And again, whether you like it or not, it's here, and we need to embrace it and do everything we can to make sure Northwestern's competing with it.
How much of an impact has this had on the Northwestern teams we're watching today?
It's had a major impact, right? Financially speaking, right, from a Northwestern football standpoint, we're not at the level that a lot of our peers in the Big Ten are at. We're doing everything we can to build to that. And so when we do get to the, you know, next summer and this revenue share idea, I actually think it's great for Northwestern overall, because ultimately it'll get us closer to what our peers are doing. And we'll be on sort of a level playing field relative to the revenue share and that cap, right? So football, we're absolutely heavily involved. Basketball, I'd say more so, right? Basketball, a little bit easier to manage. Again, like I alluded to, smaller roster, the ability to, you know, impact the play on the court with only a handful of athletes versus, you know, a football roster of 105 guys. It's just a different mathematical equation. And so we're really proud of what we've been able to do with Chris and his program. You know, we're an important piece of that puzzle. And, you know, like I think I said on Saturday, we've neutralized the NIL game for our men's basketball program, right? We're at a place where we're at the level we need to be compared to who we're recruiting against and in the game with these kids on, to know that, look, now they can make a decision based on what matters. And that is the coaches, the teammates, the atmosphere, the culture, the diploma, right? Campus, the network, all of those things that should outweigh compensation. We're able to do that because we're at a level now for men's hoops that, again, has neutralized that. So, yeah, what you're seeing on the court, on the field, look, everybody's directly impacted by NIL.
All right. What's the time frame for this? When do you expect everything to change and basically to go in-house?
Yeah. April 7th is a big date. April 7th is when the final approval of the NCAA versus House case will happen. So there's a, you know, 5-6 month period here where class members can opt out. If enough of them opt out, this whole thing blows up, and then we'll have to come back on the podcast and explain what's happening then. But for all intents and purposes, April 7th, it's going to be final approval, and July 1st of 25 is when these schools will be able to start compensating their athletes directly.
Jacob, great stuff. Again, I've asked you this many times over the past many months, but if people want to get involved and support TrueNU as it exists today, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, a couple ways, Dave. You know, TrueNU.org has all of our information. If you're interested in donating, you can do that right there. Shoot me an email, jacob@truenu.org. Right? I would love to connect. Would love to grab coffee. Would love to talk to you on the phone. Would love to, you know, just get you involved however you see fit. You know, and then follow us on socials, right? We do a decent job of updating our supporters and fans on what we're up to and telling the story beyond just the NIL piece, right? The compensation piece, but we're actually making an impact in the community with the NIL, these athletes, and we're doing it in a really cool way. So, however folks want to get in touch, we're here, and would love it.
And by the way, the pieces of old Ryan Field were sold to the good of TrueNU.
That's right. Right? That's right. Yeah, that was a fun project. We were able to monetize that in a really nice way and build some cool relationship with you know, season ticket holders and fans from every generation. So really fun project.
Jacob, appreciate the time as always. Any parting words for your former QB?
Two words, eight letters, but I can't say it on the podcast.
Be a better golfer.
Actually, you can probably, but maybe not.
Hey. Is it Barstool?
Yeah. No. Hey, listen, we appreciate it. Thanks as always. And we will, I'm sure, talk to you again during the basketball season.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Jacob.
Okay. See ya.
All right. Thanks to Jacob for joining us. And Boy, it's a different world, isn't it, Dan, from when you were playing?
It's crazy. I mean, it's hard to follow, and I think he answered a lot of the questions live that I have for him privately. It's just going to be very interesting to see, you know, which schools step up, how they handle it, and then what's going to be the true differentiators going forward. It really, what NIL was supposed to be with, like, sponsorships is going to be the differentiator for a lot of schools going forward.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting to follow, no question about that. Before we wrap things up on this edition of Collegiately Speaking, let's get to Super Joe and his predictions.
Prediction: to say or estimate a specified thing will happen in the future.
Super Joe's predictions.
Thank you, gentlemen. Our Buffaloes came through in a large way on Saturday. They jumped out to a 14-point lead and strolled to a 34-7 victory over Arizona. Another team that covered as an underdog in the Big 12 is Oklahoma State. Thanks in part to 14 fourth-quarter points, the Cowboys weren't quite able to win the game, but they finished well within the 7.5-point spread against BYU. The big story from this game actually happened in the press conference leading up to it. Okie State head coach Mike Gundy did not appear in person for his regular availability. In fact, he connected via Zoom without showing his face. You'll never guess the reason. He told reporters he had a little run-in with his cattle over the weekend. Quote, "I guess they've been watching us play and I got headbutted. I've got a bad eye that I didn't think would be particularly enjoyable for people when they were looking at my pretty face in a live interview." Oklahoma State still in search of their first conference victory of the season. Shifting back to our bread and butter in the Big Ten, three of the top four teams in the AP poll are Big Ten members. Penn State, now ranked number 3 in the country, heads to Wisconsin to take on the Badgers at 6:30 on NBC and Peacock. When facing unranked teams this season, Wisconsin is 5-0 with an average margin of victory of just under 26 points. The two times they've played teams with numbers next to their names, though, they've been outscored 80-31. Woof. I'm not sure Penn State is the third best team in the country, but I think they're at least a touchdown better than the Badgers. Let's lay the 6.5 in what should be an awesome atmosphere at Camp Randall. Maybe there'll be some cows to headbutt afterwards.
All right, Super Joe, thanks. And Iowa week, always a big week. The Cats play the next two games on the road, Iowa and Purdue, and then get a bye week before the three games in November with Ohio State at Wrigley Field, Michigan on the road, and then Illinois to wrap things up at Wrigley. Not an easy way to finish. That really even heightens the importance of the next couple of games, knowing you got Michigan and Ohio State down the road.
Yeah, I think they just need to stay present. And as you mentioned, this is a huge game for the confidence, huge game for the season. And, you know, hopefully they play well in Kinnick.
All right. We'll see what happens on Saturday, 2 o'clock, our pregame on WGN Radio, the kickoff at 2:30. And we certainly hope you will join us for that. Many thanks to Jacob Schmidt for joining us today. Thanks also to our producer, Jack Heinrich, Brett Jackson, and Dan Long helping us engineer. And thanks also to Super Joe for his predictions. Now for Dan Persa, this is Dave Ennett. Thank you for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.